they had another fellow that would call those people and so forth, the different nationalities. But now they don't have that anymore. Now I think everyone just calls into central casting to see whether there's any jobs. So then that's how I got started working in pictures. And I worked for this Tom Govins for about 9 years, and he also was engaged in the motion picture rental business. That is, he rented Chinese and Japanese costumes and props to the studios. And of course, he called the people, called the extras when they had jobs for them. So I learned the rental business when I was working for this man. And so in 1944, I bought out the inventory from a Japanese company that was also in the rental business. I might add that this was the Pearl Harbor, it was 1941, and of course after Pearl Harbor, all the Japanese were ordered to leave the West Coast. They were moved to states further east, and I think there was one camp that was set up at, I think, a place called Tule Lake in California, where they had one camp there, but most of all the Japanese were moved to back east or Midwest, and on account of the war. And so now this Japanese company that I bought the props and the costumes from, they had to leave the country. They set a certain date where all the Japanese had to move out of the West Coast. So by 1944, naturally they were all gone, but his property and was left in care of someone, and that's how we heard about it. And so we made a deal and bought over this company's assets, which consists of Chinese and Japanese costumes and different kind of art goods and props and so forth. And that's when I started into the motion picture rental business in 1944. And I was in that business until I retired in 1962.
Getting back to the beginning of your acting career, what kind of experience or special abilities did you need, or, you know, what was your first experiences like meeting with Tom and what he wanted and what you could offer and so forth?
Well, of course, Tom Govins the only thing he did was to call the people. They would give him a description of what type of people they want. They would order, say, I want 10 Chinese men, ages between, say, 20 and 40, and 10 Chinese women between certain ages, and children certain ages. And he would just go through his list of names and get the people that fit into that category. And then he would tell them what studio to go to and what time their call was. And as far as working is concerned, so most of the actors, you know, they have very little to do. They mostly either walked along the street or in shops or stores, or looked around just like shoppers, you know. And then of course they had to, if the picture background of the scene was in the Orient, in China, or then they would have rickshaws and those wheelbarrows that they used to deliver merchandise and so forth. They would have those on the streets. But a lot of the Chinese in those days, they worked in street scenes like that, also in as shopkeepers. And then sometimes they would show a restaurant and have people sitting at tables eating. And there was very little, there was no speaking parts except those that played the bit parts, and then they would have lines to say, and where they would have to learn their lines and rehearse the scenes. But like the ordinary extras, they had very little. The director would tell them what sort of action that he wanted and when they were supposed to start walking and so forth. And it was quite easy to do.
What was your very first acting assignment? What, you know, motion picture was that for, and what did you do?
Well, I can't remember the first time I played a bit part. Because in those days, the extras, the studios hired over a certain quota. I think it was 300. If they hired more than 300 extras, well, they could get some at less than around $3 a day. But ordinarily, the extras were paid from $5, $7.50, and $10 a day, depending on what they used it for. Now, in those days, they had what they call a close-up. Those would get $10 if they're near close to the camera. Those that are further away in the background, well, they would get less money. And then later on, when the Guild was formed, the Screen Actors Guild was formed, then they became unionized, and they demanded higher wages and got them from the studios. And gradually from that time on, which was about 1937, when the Guild took over all the extra people working in pictures, so it had to belong to the Guild, and so the Guild was able to get higher wages for them. And then they gradually raised their wages. Of course, in those days, it only cost the studios about $15 for a fellow to say, for a person to say some lines, you know, because I remember I worked at quite a number of jobs where I was given a line or two to say, and all I got was $15. But then later on, when the Guild took over, they raised the price for speaking lines to $25 minimum.
Per line? $25 per line?
A person just opened his mouth and said, oh, or anything like that, it would be $25. That's the minimum. So from then on, by then, wages gradually started to rise. And now, I don't know what it is today, but I'm sure that today, for a bit part, it probably would pay $200-$300 a day. But back in the old days, when the Guild first took over, they're very, very low compared to today. Now, I haven't worked for since 1950s, because I had that rental business, and I couldn't stay away from the store too long, being a one-man business. The students would call up, some property man or set dresser would call up, and no one answers the phone, and they would get after me and told me that, oh, if you want any business from us, you better stick around or have somebody stick around. So I decided, well, I better give up this working in the studios and just stay in the store and take care of the rental business. So I stopped working in pictures in the early 1950s, and I haven't worked since then.
Did you have speaking parts?
Yes, I had quite a few speaking parts.
Can you give some examples?
Well, the only one that I think of right now, and they still show it on the late movies sometimes, when they show these old movies, and it was a picture of Susan Hayward, and it's called I'll Cry Tomorrow. And
when was that made?
Oh, that was made in, well, they were made in the 50s. Must have been made in the 50s because I didn't work. I don't remember working pictures after that. So, but it's still being shown every now and then because a lot of my friends call. So I run to say, hey, Susan, the picture again. Some of them seen it several times over, you know, because they, you know how these old pictures are. They run them, one studio runs it tonight, and then a few days later, some other station's running the same thing, you know.
And what was your role in I'll Cry Again?
Oh, I was supposed to have a little grocery store. And Susan Hayward plays the part of the drunk, you know. And she gets intoxicated, and is sort of wobbling down the street, and she runs in. Comes into this little shop, a little store, and I can tell by her condition that she was either sick or drunk. So she almost fell down, so I catch her and sit her down, and then there's a Chinese lady playing my wife, and I tell my wife to go and get a glass of water for her to drink, come back and give her a glass of water and try to calm her down. But that's the only one that I... Every now and then someone says, oh, I saw you in so-and-so picture.
And how much were you paid for your part in that picture?
In that part, I would say I paid $100.
$100
yeah,
for the...
that was a, what they call a bit. A bit or a small part, $100 a day.
$100 for the whole thing or $100 a day?
That was my day.
A day meaning 8 hours of work?
Yeah, anything over 8 hours overtime.
And how many days did it take for you to?
It took about an hour.
Just about an hour?
Yeah, I only worked about an hour.
Any other
My scene actually only took about less than half an hour after, you know, they take it several times, you know, and then they pick, the editor picks out which scene is the best scene, so they keep the best scene for the pictures. And then also I worked on several pictures as a technical director, the technical director is the one that takes charge of the Chinese or Oriental extras, you know, and some of them, like the older ones, don't speak too much English, and so they're afraid that maybe they don't understand the directions when the director or the assistant director gives the instructions. So the fellow that's doing the technical, he's supposed to be like an interpreter. Tell them over the speaker, loudspeaker, explain to them over the loudspeaker what the director wants, what kind of action he wants, and so forth. And then also, when it comes to the wardrobe, the director, wardrobe man or lady might come to you and ask you, well, he's supposed to be a merchant, or he's supposed to be a crew, you know, he's supposed to be this or be that, or how should he look, how should he dress, what kind of costume should he put on, you know, things like that. And then also the property man or set dresser, they might come to you and ask you, is it proper to have this in a home or something like that, so that's what the technical director's job is.
How much were you paid?
Well, in those, In those days, that's the first technical job I had, was $150 a week. And they said, that's on a term contract. For a technical director, they usually hire you from the start to the end of the picture. The first job I had as a technical director was on Lost Horizon, the original Lost Horizon, made by Columbia Studios in 1936. See, 1936 was a big year for Johnny in motion pictures, because it was two big, expensive pictures made, Good Earth and Lost Horizon. And they both were shooting at the same time. MGM was making Good Earth, and Tom Govins, I was working for Tom Govins, I see, in the store. And, I didn't tell you that after I started working in pictures in 1932 or 33, started working as an extra. Then about a few months later, then Tom Govins asked me to work for him in his store, and then also to help him answering the phones and fill the calls and so forth.
In his curio shop?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And also answer the phone from Central Casting and fill the calls. So I started working for him. And so in 1936, MGM made Good Earth, and he went to MGM as a technical director on that picture, Good Earth. And then he sent me to Columbia Studios, and I was the technical director on Lost Horizon. So I worked on Lost Horizon, I think it was for about 8 or 9 weeks. Took them 8 or 9 weeks to shoot the picture. So I was with them, and then after that, I had several other technical jobs. One at 20th Century Fox on a Shirley Temple picture called Stowaway. And then I also worked as a technical director on a couple of pictures at Universal Studios. The one was called Smuggler's Island. And I can't remember the name of the other one.
Did you have enough money, you know, working from one, you know, movie to another in this way, or did you,
no.
You know, did you find it sort of an insecure
no,
kind
in,
of a?
In those days, there was very few of any Chinese that could actually do nothing else but work in movies and earn a living out. There were very, very few. In fact, I doubt if there were any that could really go through it 1 year, and with the amount of money they earn from working in pictures, have enough money to sustain their expenses over a 1 year's time. Yeah. In those days, it actually was like a part-time work, where whenever they called you, it was just like if you had another study job, it was just like picking up a little extra money. It wasn't until later years that a few of them might have been able to make a living out of it. People like Benson Fong, who now is a restaurant operator, and then there was this Filipino, I can't remember his first name, but he passed away recently. His last name was An. And then there's